one more really good reason to get a flu vaccine.
Do stats improve survival? People who develop a pneumonia while on a ventilator.
Are we screening too many people for cognitive decline?
Does vaccinating teenagers against whooping cough reduce the risk in infants?
That's what we're talking about this week on PodMed, the weekly look at the medical headlines from Johns Hopkins, posted on November 1st, 2013. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Rick Lang, professor of medicine at Johns Hopkins and vice chairman of medicine at the University of Texas in San Antonio.
Rick, of course, I'm going to start with the study that's in JAMA on the benefits of the flu vaccine. That's how I served it up. And of course, we know that I'm a big advocate for everybody being vaccinated for the flu. And here's yet one more reason why we ought to go ahead and do that.
We frequently talk about what are called traditional cardiovascular risk factors, like diabetes and hypertension and cigarette smoking. But there are non-traditional cardiovascular risk factors as well, one of which is an influenza infection. That has been associated with both fatal and non-fatal cardiovascular events. So that begs the question, in individuals that actually receive the flu vaccine, does it reduce the risk of having a subsequent cardiovascular event? So this was a systematic review and a meta-analysis of studies conducted over the last 60 years. These were randomized clinical trials that compared influenza vaccine, either to placebo or control, in patients that were at a high risk of cardiovascular disease. This includes six studies of almost 7,000 patients, equally divided among men and women. What they discovered was, in their analysis, that influenza vaccine was indeed associated with a lower risk of composite cardiovascular events, death, stroke, heart attacks. It reduced it from 4.7% to 2.9%. And it was most helpful in individuals that had a recent acute coronary syndrome.
Well, as I suggested, this is yet one more reason why people ought to go ahead and get a flu shot if they've been resisting it. We have talked a little bit before, though, about that period right when you get a flu shot. Let's talk a little bit about that and about the role of inflammation in this particular syndrome.
Well, first of all, what I need to tell our listeners is you can't get the flu from getting the flu shot. You can develop a mild reaction with a very low grade temperature, some myalgias that has a little bit of muscle soreness, but you actually don't develop the flu. The second is, the reason why this study is important is if you think inflammation can lead to heart attacks and that a flu shot could cause a low grade inflammation, could it potentially increase the risk of cardiovascular events? And what this meta-analysis shows is that's not the case.
And on that note, I'm going to say, so it's clear that everyone ought to go ahead and get a flu shot. I just read today another study taking a look at a higher stimulation dosage that's been formulated for older people that results in protection from the flu. And I bet is also helpful in this regard as well. So no excuses, folks. Get out there and get one.
And this is actually part of the guidelines of the American Heart Association now for people that have known cardiovascular disease.
Okay. Let's, since we're talking about immunizations, take a look at the journal Pediatrics. If we give tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis boosters to teenagers, what happens to infants?
This is a really important thing because in the United States, whooping cough or pertussis is on the rise. And the individuals that are most susceptible to getting severe infections and being hospitalized are the very young and the elderly as well. So one of the potential ways of preventing them from getting the disease is to prevent their exposure to it. So since universal vaccination is now the policy among adolescents, what this study did was it assessed the rate of hospitalization for infants before universal vaccination was undertaken and subsequently. And since universal vaccination has been in place, what they discovered was that the rate of hospitalization among infants has been cut by between a half and two-thirds.
That is a most impressive result. And what has been any potential negative impact of this policy?
Really, no negative impact at all.
It helps to improve not just their health, but the health of everyone around them, so-called herd immunity. And one more reason why we need to get as many people vaccinated as possible when those recommendations come out.
And the recommendation currently is that all pregnant women would also be vaccinated as well. Again, that's to protect the most vulnerable of the population, infants under the age of one.
Okay, let's turn then to the other part of the age spectrum. In Annals of Internal Medicine, a look at screening for cognitive dysfunction, and are we doing it too much?
This is a report from the USPSTF, and what they do to remind our listeners, is they systematically go through all the available literature and they try to summarize it. What they report is that although brief instruments to screen for cognitive impairment can adequately detect dementia, unfortunately, there is no empirical evidence that this screening actually improves decision making. I was really surprised by this, and what it suggests is that as a result is that there's really no good reason, at least today, based upon the current evidence, to routinely screen for cognitive impairment or dementia.
And this, of course, begs the question about the utility of screening in any venue. The question really boils down to, why should we screen if we don't have anything to offer? And in point of fact, with regard to dementia, we really cannot offer much or even anything in the way of staving it off or slowing it down.
And in fact, many listeners will say, wait a minute, don't we have medications that have been approved by the FDA for Alzheimer's disease? And the answer is yes. But what the studies show is that there's really a very small benefit. And that small benefit is really of uncertain clinical importance, both for the patients and their caregivers. So you're right. Screening has to do with how prevalent the disease is in the population, how good is your screening test, and more importantly, do you have some way to treat the underlying condition? And unfortunately, right now, the answer for the latter is no.
I guess I'm also persuaded by the idea that in spite of the hypothesis that when people find out that they do have dementia, they subsequently make arrangements and decisions about their upcoming care is not really borne out.
You're right. No studies to suggest that. I found this surprising. We've talked before about the fact that if you knew you had mild cognitive impairment, would somehow you act differently or would the treatment be different or would the caregiver's response be different? And the answer is, unfortunately, no studies suggest that any of that's true.
So for the moment, I think we're going to have to just hope that some effective intervention appears before we age into that group. Finally, then, let's turn to our last study for this week. That's in the Journal of the American Medical Association, a look at statins, that thing that maybe we're going to be putting in the water pretty soon, usually used for cholesterol lowering, of course, and potential benefit for people who are on ventilators in the ICU and their acquisition of pneumonia.
Besides their cholesterol lowering effects, statins also exert some anti-inflammatory effects and some immunomodulating effects. They've been reported to counteract some of the deleterious effects of other infections, particularly systemic infections like sepsis. This was a study to assess whether administration of statins to people that developed pneumonia while on a ventilator, so-called VAP, ventilator-associated pneumonia, in an attempt to improve their survival. So this was a very well-conducted, randomized, placebo-controlled, double-blind, multi-center trial performed in 26 different intensive care units in France, with over 1,000 patients that received mechanical ventilation for more than 2 days and were suspected of having pneumonia related to that. And half of them were given statin at a high dose, simvastatin, or placebo. The study was stopped after only 300 were enrolled because of futility. What they realized is that the mortality in the statin group was actually not lower, but a little bit higher than in the placebo group. And even enrolling all 1,000 patients wouldn't change the results. Now, why did I pick this particular study? Well, for physicians that are treating patients, oftentimes we prescribe these medications in an attempt to improve survival. But the other reason is because multiple meta-analyses have suggested that statins may in fact be helpful. What I would remind our listeners is that many times these meta-analyses do a good job of giving us a hypothesis to test, but when we do a properly conducted, randomized trial that's blinded, that oftentimes the treatment that is suggested to be beneficial in the meta-analysis is not beneficial in properly controlled trials. And that's what happened in this particular case.
I guess the other thing it does is it erodes that stellar reputation that statins have enjoyed for a while. And it's a shame, though, because we know a little bit about statins, that they weren't very helpful in this situation. I think in other acute situations or pre-surgically, for example, these results have also been disappointing.
And again, those are observational studies. Now, I failed to mention that all these patients were treated with antibiotics. I don't want our listeners to think that these were people that had pneumonia and they got treated with statin or placebo and didn't receive antibiotics. All patients received antibiotics. But again, it shows the importance that observational studies can't control for many of the confounding factors that decide whether a physician uses a particular treatment or not. And the best way to address this is with a randomized controlled trial.
Okay. On that note, then, I'll reveal that, of course, I'm going to talk about the flu vaccine and cardiovascular disease this week on the blog. That's a look at this week's medical headlines from Johns Hopkins. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Rick Lang. Y'all live well.